Hi everyone, welcome back to Let's Talk. On our third episode, I speak with Adelphi University head men's basketball coach Dave Duke on leadership and the life of a coach. Prior to arriving at Adelphi, Dave was an assistant at both Hofstra and Fordham and is a disciple of Jay Wright. In his second year leading Adelphi, a Division II school in Long Island, Dave led the Panthers to a 20-9 mark, a 14-win improvement from his first year, and a 12-9 record in the Northeast 10, a 9-win increase in conference play. We start our discussion by looking back at this past season.
It was a great year. Yes, my two-year anniversary is right around the corner.
Right.
It was an unbelievable season. You know, I took over the job, and the team was coming off of a 5-win season. And our big goal as a staff was, the signature season is 20. So you always hope for 20, but we were realistic in our goals. We said, let's try to win at least one more game than the year before, and let's really try to bring in a great recruiting class. Great students, great people, great players. And fortunately, we were able to achieve both of those goals. We won 6 games in 14-15, and this year we were really able to have an extremely nice turnaround, and from the 6 wins, we turned it into a 20-9 season, and we were just very fortunate to have great players who really bought into this system and how hard we try to play and really get the culture going in the right direction, in conjunction with those guys, it was also having a staff who, best staff in the country. These guys are unbelievable. And between the players and the staff and all the support we get from the administration, we were able to get from 6-20. Now we've set the bar pretty high, so now we have to keep it at that level.
What's the next step? So you had a great playoff game, lost by 2.
It was a great game. I liken it to a heavyweight boxing match. We swung first, they swung, they came back. We were even at halftime. They jumped on us in the second half. They were up 9 with about 4 minutes to go. We came back. Our senior Anthony LaBroya had an incredible game. And we tied it up. So at the end of halftime, to go into the half, it was tied. And the regulation, it was tied. We took the lead. We were up a couple. They made some free throws. And with about 10 seconds left, they ran a high ball screen, a screen and pop. And they were down 1. They made a 3. And we came down, so they go up 2. We came down, and we had some really good looks. We just didn't make them, but the crowd. You know, I was speaking with you about how at the end of the season, the crowd, everybody was really, the school spirit was flying high going into that game. I remember in the playoff game, we were down 3. We just couldn't get over that hump, you know, and then we tied it up. And the place just exploded.
Yeah,
it exploded, yeah. And it was a great atmosphere. And that's what we—that's a part of what we're building. And the goal was to build the team and the culture. And Adelphi is an amazing place, an absolute amazing place. And you got to see really what the value of the students being there to create that energy. So that was, you know, that was how we finished off with that game. And we missed the NCAA tournament. Out of 8 teams in the region, we finished 9th. Going into that game, we were right there. One of the other teams that we were competing with for the 8th spot wound up winning our conference tournament. They did a terrific job. You know, I have to take my hat off to them and give them their kudos. They were terrific. But we just missed the tournament. So as disappointed as I am, because I can't say was, because it's still with me, the fact of the matter is, it was nice for the, in a sense, it's good for the guys, so we're really staying hungry. And we see how important every play is in every game. Because you never know which game and which play is going to be the reason you're not able to further your season.
For the folks, our listeners, that may not know, Adelphi being in Division II, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Northeast 10 Conference, folks obviously know Selection Sunday and the Division I element. How does it work? NCAA tournament, conference tournament in D2?
Sure. So, great question. It's actually very similar.
Okay.
What happens in the difference between Division I, Division II, Division I is 64 national. You know, you have your conference tournament winners, and then everybody comes from all different places. In Division II, you have 8 regions, and within the 8 regions, you have 8 teams from the 8 regions. So it's a 64-team tournament, and everything is the same. Their trademark is the Final Four. In Division II, it's the Elite Eight. Mm-hmm. And everything else is the same. So we just missed out of the Northeast 10, the East Coast Conference, and the CAC. Those are really the three leagues. And Adelphi, we're very fortunate to be in the Northeast 10. We typically get five teams.
Okay.
Some years six teams into that NCAA tournament. So it's an incredibly competitive league. The ball, and I've been fortunate. When, you know, when I was at Hofstra, I was in the America East first, and then the Colonial, yep. And then at Fordham in the Atlantic 10. But I've gotten to see some really, really high-level basketball, and that's what the Northeast 10 is. It's really, if you take that label of that Roman numeral 2 away, mm-hmm. it's if you want to talk about divisions, it really is a Division I league. The players we have in this in our conference are just terrific, and it's very challenging, and it's really enjoyable to be able to participate.
Let's take a step back. You talked about building a culture. What's the culture you're trying to build?
You know, what we try to do is really get the guys to believe in playing hard all the time. That it's not just about going out and scoring points and outscoring somebody. It starts with coming in to work every single day to get better. And that's the preparation, from the preparation that you put in, you know, to the blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak, from preseason to practice to postseason. And that's defending, that's rebounding, that's taking charges, that's diving on loose balls. It's all the intangibles. And you know, we really try to, the way I like to coach, I love very skilled players, which is terrific because they're going to be able to produce offensively. But when I speak with the guys all the time, I tell them, it's great that you could all score, but if you're not defending, rebounding, and making those energy plays, you're not going to get the opportunity to score because you're going to be sitting next to the assistant coaches on the bench.
Right.
But if they're doing that, that's the culture we want to create. Because when you have the culture of doing whatever it takes to win a basketball game and you really buy into that, that allows you to be able to excel with your offensive prowess, and then on the defensive end as well, you enjoy getting a stop, and that's how you're able to be extremely successful.
Where did that mindset, that culture, or your vision of that culture come from? Who were the influencers?
So as you asked, you know, the first thing that comes to mind as I was speaking was I was very fortunate. My first job was given to me by Jay Wright. So when he was at Hofstra, and I was a graduate assistant for him for 2 years, and then I was the third assistant under him for a year. And I got to see that every single day when I was just out of college. And I was like a sponge. We'll get into the various ways that I was like a sponge around Coach Wright. But just seeing how hard those guys played and practiced every day. And it was really so enjoyable for me to be able to see his Villanova team do what they did on the national stage. But that's how he coaches, because he did that when we were at Hofstra. So it's just not, well, now he's got the best player. No, that's what he's able to do. And that's why, to me, he's the best coach in the country, because his guys always play so hard and they play together. So I was very fortunate that I was around him from the start.
Can you go to the players now? Not that they weren't buying in before, but if there's any question mark, I mean, your credibility almost bolsters because we have a national championship team
and
doing the same thing.
And that's what I've referenced Villanova all the time throughout the season. I reference Coach Wright all the time through the season. That the guys, like you said, the guys must have, you know, and sometimes I say it like again. But I take so much pride in watching them and seeing him and watching him speak all the time, because the messages he sends are the best. And you could just see what happens when those messages are sent and they're followed through on from the players.
How gratifying was it for you to see him accomplish the ultimate feat?
It was great. It was great. Obviously, from the athletic side, you know, you see what all that hard work does with the preparation and the culture, but also because, you know, Coach Wright and his family were just incredible, great people, wonderful people. His wife Patty, everybody they treated me. We were all, you know, we were family. So I can't tell you how much I enjoyed and how much I appreciated all of the, not only the basketball lessons, but the life lessons that I was able to learn from them. And to see him cutting the net down, to see, you know, his wife on the court, it was, and his kids, and it's really gratifying doesn't even do justice to how happy I was for him and his family.
And you're still in touch on a
Yes. We talk with text. So yeah,
right,
he's great and so well deserved. And if you knew him, you know, and when you were around him, but this was, it's kind of the rite of passage. You just knew it was going to happen. He's synonymous with success.
And going back to coming out of Albany, or even going back before then, were you always thinking the coaching track?
Interestingly enough, no.
Oh.
I wasn't sure. You know, I really wasn't sure. I majored in communications, and the end of my high school career going to play college wasn't always the best experience as I was getting recruited. So when I had the opportunity, I didn't play in Albany. I stepped away from the game for a couple of years, and what's nice now, which I'll get to in a second, was I missed the game. So I played at New York Tech in grad school for a year. And that was when I decided maybe, you know, I'd like to get into coaching. And one of the things that I did want to do was, and I really didn't know all that it entailed at the time. I got very fortunate that everything worked out the way it did. But the recruiting process, being very honest all the time with everybody, you know, whether you think somebody is the player you want or if they're not. There are certain things that, from my experience, I learned from as a coach and that I do and don't do just knowing what I went through. But what was great for me was I grew up about 15 miles from Hofstra. And I was able to, when I was at New York Tech, my coach asked me if I wanted to work with him next year. And I wanted to try it out at the Division I level, and I really, again, I had no idea. I got so lucky that I got a grad assistant job, and the graduate assistant job basically consisted of, I took two classes, and I was in the office like 100 hours a week.
With NYIT or were at Hofstra?
I was at Hofstra.
So how does that come about?
So what my coach knew the guys at Hofstra.
Okay.
And that was where he used to speak about the guys at Hofstra all the time, and they hadn't quite turned it around yet, and then I said, you know, you constantly talk about your relationships with the people at Hofstra. Could you see if I could get in there? At the time, there was no grad assistant program.
Oh.
I was myself and a good friend of mine who coaches at Holy Trinity, Joe Conifrey. We were the first two graduate assistants or graduate managers, if you will, because it allowed us to be on the court. And then from there, I really took advantage of it. Basically lived in the office. There were nights, you know, I slept in the locker room, and it's a nice locker room, you know,
I was there
around the clock. So I had a great experience, and that was where my time from not playing at Albany, I played recreationally, and I was
but
still
you weren't,
around
just
the game.
To clarify, you go through the recruiting process. You're recruited to Albany?
No, I
you
wasn't
never...
recruited to Albany.
Okay.
I was recruited to Albany. But what happened was I was recruited to a couple of low Division I schools, low to mid Division I schools, and I was recruited to some Division II schools, and things were being pulled from underneath me. I have an offer, I don't have an offer, and it was just very confusing for a 17-year-old kid, and that was where I was kind of a little bit disappointed, and from that I said I'm going to step back and just be a student.
Okay.
But then when I had that break, I really missed it. So I took the 4-year hiatus.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. So you can say that again. When my brain was telling my body to make some of the moves,
right.
And I was a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
20 pounds later,
yeah.
A little bit stronger, not quite as quick. My body said, I don't know if we're going to exactly do this move. But
right.
But that was where, but I was fortunate that I worked hard. I was able to get back in shape to be able to play.
That was a break to get to NYIT.
Yeah.
And play.
Yes, yes.
Without any collegiate experience.
Yeah,
or collegiate, you know, anything at the D1 level.
Right.
And so there was no relationship with Jay to get to Hofstra. And
no.
What makes them create a graduate assistant program?
Basically, what happened was we went in, and it was, they had their undergraduate managers, and I said, whatever, is there a job? I'll do whatever I have to do. I mean, I'm checking my ego at the door. It doesn't matter.
Were you thinking coaching at this point, or
At this point, I made the decision. I want to get into coaching. I was watching the NCAA tournament. It was the NCAA tournament in 19. It was a little before. It was the 97-98 season, and I was watching a lot of the games. And I said, once I got back into New York Tech, I said, this is what I want to do. And then when they had the opportunity to meet, you know, with Jay at Hofstra, a coach right at Hofstra, I said, This is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. And coach gave me a chance. And I was honest when I said that, from the coffee to the copies, whatever it was. Well, funny story is, the copy machine broke when we were at Hofstra, and coach called me Dookie. He said, Dookie, we got to have these copies for practice. There was no job more important for me than running to the local Kinko's, FedEx office, and make those copies. But it did, you know, this was what I knew my job was. It was a part of it, and he was so great to work for that whatever it was, you wanted to do the best that you could.
The pre-technology era,
exactly
going
right.
to Kinko's,
exactly right.
And now everyone has a graduate assistant, right? I mean, that's taken for granted.
Very often, yes. Well, most of the teams have those positions, and my position there was. I paid to go to school, and I was just so happy to be able to be around the program. And what was even better for me was, I didn't know at the time, because I was just coming from playing in graduate school playing at New York Tech and undergraduate, I should say. I was fortunate to walk into Coach Wright, because right. I mean I right. walked into a superstar.
Right.
And when that happened, I knew upon meeting him, and I was 19. I was 22 years old, and I. Didn't know anything, and I still don't. But when I met him, I was like, "This guy's unbelievable. He's just unbelievable." And fortunately, you know, I had that opportunity, and I just tried whatever I could to make the most of it.
And you could have walked into anybody. That's right. That's what's amazing about it.
Amazing.
And what was the dynamic like with you and the players at that point? I don't know how much your responsibilities actually involved being on the floor with them, but you're not too much older than them.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And some I was not older. I was 22.
Right.
I was younger than some of them who had transferred and had to do their year of residence. You know, one thing that you learn when you get into the coaching business, especially in that position, is that there's a line. Mm-hmm. There's the players and then the coaches. And it's all one, like how we do it here, it's all one big family. But it's like being at home. Your parents, your aunts, and your uncles. And then you have the cousins and the brothers,
right.
you know?
Right.
So there's a big divide in just a line that's set. And, you know, whether it was on the floor, whether it was checking classes, you know, whatever I was doing, they knew that I'm one of the, you know, I'm on the coach's side. Like, we're all, you know, we're all together in this. But we also had great guys that never challenged, that to this day, I still speak with all of them and really friendly with them. Now, I wasn't, you know, yelling and screaming, breathing down their necks in practice.
Right.
So, but at the same time, you know, they respected my position. I respected them as people and as great players, which we had. And it was really a nice friendship.
It probably helped that you weren't coming from where you played at Hofstra and then became the graduate assistant, because there was no previous built-in relationship.
Right.
And you had no expectation of what it should be, because you had never been on a staff before. So,
exactly. I think
it was almost a naive aspect.
Absolutely right.
It was good.
Absolutely right. And what happens is, when you come from a program where you played and you're constantly moving up, there's still your friends.
Right.
You know, and even when I was a younger assistant, I had to wait. I really felt more comfortable, obviously, when the last group that I came in with graduated, because then everybody knows you exclusively as a coach,
right?
Not necessarily as the player. You know, I'm sorry, as the graduate assistant, or if you were a former player type. But that made it a little bit easier for sure. When everybody, even for me, when all of the guys that I came in with graduated. Because then there wasn't that gray area anymore.
And so we were fast forwarding to, well, actually I want to get to, what were some of the things we talked about that you were a sponge, beyond the things we've talked about that you took from Jay that obviously have groomed you into the head coach you are today?
Well, there's the, you know, of course the basketball and getting your guys to play hard. I still use what Coach Wright said was play hard, play together, play smart, and play with pride. Those are really the four cornerstones from there for your program, and from that, just making sure you're always prepared. Whatever it is, you're constantly prepared, whether it's being down on the floor for practice or a workout, going to have a public speaking engagement, whatever it is, to make sure you're prepared for everything. And then I used to just even go and just watch them when we used to go to dinners. I would just shadow him. He couldn't get away from me.
Yeah.
Just because I loved the way he would speak with people and connect with people. And I always watched, and to this day, I still love to watch. He's the best. He's the absolute best. And I was fortunate to see that. And when, how you need to build the relationships and continue to further your relationships, I got to just watch that aspect as well. From being around him at that age,
which is an essential part of the coaching industry,
absolutely, especially collegiately,
right?
Because a big part of it is your recruiting and with your administration. There's so, if you think about a pie chart, in the NBA, I'm not in the NBA, so I can't say for sure. But from speaking with friends of mine who are in the NBA, who have been in college already coaching, in that pie chart, you're coaching. The GMs, everybody else is getting the players, unless you've multiple responsibilities with that organization. Within college, within a collegiate team, you're the GM. Mm-hmm. You're your team's CEO. You're the coach, and they're in that pie chart. You could cut it up to various different sections. So you do need to learn how to be effective at all of them if you want to be a coach who wins, very successful, which we see with Coach Wright. As a national champion.
Yeah, there's a lot of people to answer to. Your athletic director, the academic folks, the recruiting. Did you learn recruiting from Jay at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The recruiting was, from watching how he looks at the guys and then how he goes and speaks with the players and speaks with their families and all of the social aspect of it as well from the recruiting. But a lot of that I just got to see, he was himself. And when you just try to be who you are, that really allows you to flourish. And I watched that from him, and I loved so many of the effective methods he has. From just constantly communicating, and that's for me. I continue to this day. I always think, how would Coach Wright handle the situation right now?
Coaching mannerisms too. Someone told me you don't come out until the last second or whatever. That was a Jay thing.
I take everything from, really. I mean, I've tried to emulate. I've been fortunate to really try to emulate everything that I got to see. It was a time of my life where I was so influential. So 22 to 25, I was right out of college. And I got to see, somebody that I thought and continue to think was, the best. So that was everything I could take.
Why do you guys do that? You just want to shock and awe them at the end?
Sometimes you're out there and it's like you're already thinking about all of the different preparations for the game. And it just allows you a little bit more time to yourself to get your thoughts together. Because then once you come out, you see, a lot of different people in the stands and people coming up, and it gives you those extra few minutes to get yourself prepared for the game.
Wardrobe sharp too.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate it. I try to represent the school and mm-hmm. the university, and that's another thing that I took from Coach. You always want to do everything you can to represent yourself, your family, and your university as well as possible. So I tried to, do the best I can with that.
Right. And so we get to 2000, 2001, in that time frame when Jay goes to Villanova. Are you thinking, what's my future? Do you have a decision to make?
At the time, when he left, when Coach Pecora took over, there were some, a couple of different reasons that it just worked out that I stayed at Hofstra. And again, I was fortunate to be at a great place. You know, we were coming off two NCAA tournaments, and for me, I was fortunate to be in New York and stay. But, you know, I kind of took it where whatever happens with it, wherever I wind up, I know I'm either, you know, going to be, either way, I knew I was going to be in a great place. And I'm a big believer in, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I've been very fortunate. You know, I was at Hofstra. I was able to be at Fordham, two terrific universities prior. And now, you know, coming back out to Long Island, where I grew up 10 miles away in Queens. So I've been very fortunate in my career to be here. And now, you know, at Adelphi, to be at a place that you look at historically, the success that Adelphi has had has been off the charts. And it fell off a little bit prior to, you know, to me getting here. And it's allowed me to get the rebuild of a program. And that's something I saw Coach Wright do as well. And I always watch, and I really always respected so much how he was able to build it. And you know, we had talked one day, and sometimes, obviously, you take over a team that's done better. You don't have to go through your lumps. But it allows you in this business to learn how to deal. You know, they say, you know, I use a lot of quotes and cliche with the team sometimes, but the true person shows when adversity strikes. So it allows us as a team to work through the bad, and then you really appreciate the good, you know. But back to your original question, I wound up, you know, I was at Hofstra, and I wound up being at Hofstra for a total of 12 years. And, you know, I loved it. I was in a great spot there as well. And then now I'm back out here at Adelphi, which I can't be more thankful for. Just an amazing, amazing university.
When does the head coaching itch, or, well, there's two aspects. Did you want to be a head coach, or would you have been satisfied being in the role as an assistant?
I wanted to be a head coach.
Okay. So you're at Hofstra for a long period of time. When do you feel that you're ready to take that next step?
So at the end, when I was at Hofstra, I was the second assistant.
Right.
I was able to work with, I've been very fortunate, had great, great people around me. Van Maken was, yep, was the top assistant at the time. So by the end of Hofstra, I started to get the itch, you know, of being, but I also knew I was a second assistant at the time. And then from there, when the Fordham job happened, it was a bit of a fresh start because it was in a new league in the, you know, the Atlantic 10. And it, once again, we had been gotten, Hofstra was really, we were really successful there, but it was another rebuild. So it became, you know, it became a challenge. How are we going to take a team that won 5 games in 2 years? How are we going to turn that around? And then by the end of my, by the end of my fourth year at Fordham, that was, I should say, in the beginning to the middle of my fourth year at Fordham, that itch really came back. And then at the end of the fourth year, when the Adelphi job opened, it was a great job, and I was really, really intrigued with it. And what added to that was for the fact that our athletic director, Danny McCabe, he's somebody that I worked with. He was the assistant athletic director at Hofstra when I was the assistant coach at Hofstra. So knowing that I was going to be around an incredibly successful professional. He's an unbelievable professional. He does an incredible athletic director. And person as well, just a terrific human being. I knew that this was something that I felt would be a great fit.
Were there close calls before? Because I'm, you know, what I would think, hard to put myself in your shoes, but when you're getting, when the Fordham moment comes, I'm thinking, we're going to do another rebuild and I'm going to be the assistant again. I would be like, I'll do the rebuild, but get me to the head coaching job.
Yeah, you know, that does cross your mind, but for me, when I knew it was something new, that was when I said, okay, this is, let's make, you know, there's another cliche, let's make this job your next, you know, in coaching, and when I was there as an assistant coach, what's my next job? So I didn't want to jump the gun. I knew when things would happen organically, and I do believe everything was happening for a reason, how could this prepare me for when I am a head coach? And the difference was, when we were at Hofstra, when Coach Wright left, we lost like 80 or 85% of our team. We lost, they all graduated. I mean, we had such terrific teams, you know, those years at Hofstra. And when Coach left and those guys graduated, not only did we lose about 80 to 85% of our scoring, we transitioned from the America East to the Colonial Conference.
Yes.
But at the same time, we still had the players that we knew, that we recruited. So for me, this was really inheriting at Fordham a new program. So when we were there and I got to see how new coach, new players, new institution, that really prepared me for when I got the Adelphi job. And as they were struggling with certain things, new coach, new players, new institution, so I was a lot more comfortable walking into this situation from that.
Gotcha. And how does a, obviously you know Danny when this job comes open, but are there feelers put out via an agent? Is a, you hear about these search firms. How do you actually go about applying for a head coaching job?
Well, there are, those are all, you know, multiple ways that it happens. In this situation, it just worked out that Danny and I, you know, that we knew each other. And as the process was going along, you know, we got to speak about it, and then it was great. I went through, I had an interview on a Friday, and I was walking around. You know, like I said, I grew up about 10 miles from here, and what very often happens in coaching is you'll come to a school, be it a high school or a college, and you go straight to the gym, because very often you're coming to recruit, you're coming for a game, and then you leave. So now, I knew Adelphi was a beautiful place. So many of my friends, Van, had worked here. My mother went to graduate school here. My cousin went to graduate school here. So I knew a lot of people, and they all spoke so highly of Adelphi. And on my interview, I was in the middle of walking around, and there's one location. The whole campus is gorgeous, but by a flag, there was a flagpole, and underneath it, there were these flowers that were beautiful blossoms. They were all blue. And I'm looking around, and I was just in awe. What a gorgeous campus! I mean, I knew it was nice, but it even exceeded all my expectations to the point now. When I'm recruiting, I speak with the families and the players. I don't only recruit locally anymore. I get into, you know, northern New England. I'll go down to Baltimore and DC. I'll tell them, if you think I'm upselling the school, you're mistaken. I said, because I can't speak highly enough. And then when they get here, they said, Coach, we weren't sure for how nice you said it was going to be. And it is every single bit as nice as you said. So that was how, you know, when I got here after, you know, speaking with Danny and coming on board, that was how I know this was great. Interviewed on a Friday. I was fortunate enough to come back for a second interview on a Wednesday. Danny and I spoke. He presented it for me, and he said, "No, if you want to think about it," I said, "There's nothing to think about." I said, "I accept." I said,
"Yeah."
It was a great morning. It was a great morning, and I feel really so fortunate to be able to be here.
And I gotta ask, I mean, you're an ambitious guy, naturally. I mean, do you think higher? Do you think, was there ever an NBA interest?
No, it's funny. A good friend of mine is in two of the guys that I started off with on that Hofstra staff are in the NBA right now. Brett Gunning, he's an assistant coach for the Houston Rockets, and Eugene Burrows is an assistant coach with the Philadelphia 76ers. But for me, I love working with the collegiate guys. I really enjoy. We had individual workouts this morning, and I love coming in and working with these guys. And for me, it's not only about the basketball. I love it, but we're also molding them to be responsible young men. You know, and that aspect of the college coaching is something that I really, really enjoy.
And let's talk faith a little bit. You being a religious Jew, how big was that always something growing up? Did you grow up in a religious household?
No, it's, you know, it wasn't a religious household. It was, you know, we had some our traditions, but it's just something that, you know, I love the values and just really, you know, being a good person and just trying your best in everything you do. And I try to, you know, to keep that and just, you know, as I've grown, just it really it's just something that I enjoy being around.
And so how do you balance that, being observant Friday nights, Saturday, with the college basketball schedule where you have games on Saturday and the schedule can be relentless?
I guess the best way to explain it is, you know, what's
observant to one is not as observant to another. What's religious to one, not another. So, you know, I don't put an exact description on what I do the best I can with what I'm comfortable with, and then everything, you know, everything is always able to work.
It's interesting. I was thinking to myself, boy, let's just be realistic. There's not that many observant Jewish basketball players that I see collegiately. Maybe there's more in the Northeast 10. But then I thought, athletes in general, there's many religious athletes, maybe even more, I don't know, statistics than the general public. And so in ways, it's a connecting force. Not that you have to practice what I'm practicing, but that faith is a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I think faith's a great thing. You know, again, we tell our guy, just really be a good person. Just be a good person and hold that value. And we tell our guys around here, and I took this from Coach Wright as well, everybody's roles on the team might be different. Some people are meant to score 20. Some people are meant to rebound, you know, get 10 rebounds a game. Some people are meant to score a point a game. Some people aren't meant to play. So everybody's roles are going to be different, but everybody's status on the team is the same. Everybody's status everywhere in life is the same. You know, we're all people, everybody, we all take, there's a lot of value in our program, a lot of pride placed in being a really good person.
How do you balance getting away from coaching?
So that's a great question, and this is such an interesting business for that, because it's not only a job. Mm-hmm. It's a way of life. Yes. It's a lifestyle.
Yep.
My phone is on 24/7.
Wow.
It's just because our team is family. So, you know, God forbid there's anything that goes wrong. You know, we're always there for each other. But you have to create the balance where you have to know there are some things that you can't do tomorrow. Not for me, that's something that I really do struggle with. And this goes back to when I was a graduate assistant. It's just like, I'm usually, when it comes to my job, I'm 100 miles per hour all the time. And that's where, when you asked about being a pro coach or a collegiate coach, but the NBA, I love the coaching aspect to it. There's no question. I love the job, but I also, when you have the relationships with your players, I guess it's at any level you do, but when you love what you do so much, it's hard to slow down, and you just want to be around it all the time, and I'm fortunate to love what I do, because it's on my mind all the time. Last night, you know, I finished dinner and I'm thinking about already, you know, okay, I was thinking about what we're going to do all weekend and our workouts today and the next team meeting. So it doesn't stop. So that is something that I know I could do a better job at, of getting a little bit more balance.
What are the things, if you can create the time, that you do for fun or that may be interest outside of basketball?
I think that's why I need to create some more balance, because it's really basketball and our team 24/7. It's something that I can't tell you how much I really enjoy it. So when I enjoy it so much, you know, I don't have a family yet. When you have a family, that's when you have to make sure you make time, you know, your family time, and you're able to separate a little bit more. But for me, I know balance is something that I definitely can work on a little bit.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate, because there's, and not that the Golden State Warriors are comparable to what Josh Pastner is taking over at Georgia Tech, but you look at, a lot's been written about the Warriors' organizational structure. They go surfing. They take the day off. They put an emphasis on getting away. Steve Kerr has that mindset. And Josh Pastner said, and I come from a business where it is also, you're all in or you're not. It was taken, the big quote was that, I'm not hiring guys that like to golf a lot because you need to be involved 24/7. But so it becomes this balance, take a day off for golf, but it is an all-immersive job.
It is. But here's my thing with that. There are, I also do know the value of the day off, where in my downtime, reading a book, mm-hmm. you know, again, very often the books pertain to basketball, yeah. Or coaching or leadership, but even that, for my assistant coaches, for the players, we work so hard on a daily basis that if there is a day, if they're when they have a day off, I want them to enjoy it, spend time with their family. During the season, on a Sunday, I'll tell the players, we'll play when we have the day off, and say, guys, don't touch a basketball. Get out of here. Don't come in the gym tonight. And for the coaches, if we don't have film or something, typically during the season for a coach, it's a little bit different because we play Saturday, Wednesday. So on Sunday, we're watching film for Wednesday. But for this time of year, if we're not in recruiting mode, I want everybody to spend time away. Just way when it is the season, it is usually 24/7. But even not when the guys get to exhale a little bit, and then when we're in the office, it's all business, and their minds aren't elsewhere because they're thinking, I haven't done X, right. Y, Z for so right. long, and they're fully locked in, and then they appreciate it even more.
And when you're dealing, and Jay's talked about this, 18 to 22 year old kids have a lot going on, and I would think a major challenge is when you're at the when you're at the practice court at the game, you got to block it all out.
Exactly.
How do you do it?
It's a mindset, and you're able to really compartmentalize the different aspects of things that are going on in your life, and it's tough because everybody at different phases in their lives have different things going on. But we just really place a value on everything, 50 by 94, and when we're on the court, this is it. And an example of that will be I tell our guys all the time, we have unbelievably nice people a part of our program. But I tell them, when we're on the court, our personalities change. I try to be as nice a person as I can, and not that I'm not nice on the court, but it's competition, we're competitive. There's another element, that goes on out there, and all this personality changes in effect of like, our guys, you got to be more competitive out there and do everything you can in a clean, legal way while you're playing, but you're not always just the nicest guy in the world out there. Have an edge to you is the best way to say it. And I tell them, and they see that with me also. When we're practicing and we're in games, it's business. It's business. It's done the right way, in a respectful way, in a classy way, but it's business.
How do you go about assembling a team that, hey, they're working hard, they practice hard, they're skilled, they're gritty, but they gel together?
Well, a big part of that, and this is one of the nice things that I got to learn here, is we came in and it was really going to be a new team. So, how are you going to see who your leaders are, who's not? And in that recruiting process, I watch for guys who are less concerned with, to give you another cliche, less concerned with me than we. And who's going to pass the ball? Do they enjoy it? When they're in high school, am I watching them? Are they happy passing? Are they yelling at their teammates? Very often when you have a player, a scholarship level player, whether it's Division I or II, and even to play anywhere collegiately, you got to be a great player. Are the guys who are so much better yelling at their teammates if they make a mistake? If they're that much better than them, they throw them a pass, it gets bobbled. Or are they patting them on the back saying, don't worry about it? Those things that you could see transition into great teammates. And we did a lot of our due diligence recruiting those kind of players. And it's funny watching, I wouldn't say it's funny, it's great to watch the Warriors right now, but that was always the type of player that I loved. Just very skilled guys and very selfless guys. We break huddles. One of the things that we say is we say selfless. Coach, right? I always said attitude.
Right.
He always said attitude. And I really struggled with that myself. But I thought our first year, there was some, before some of the changes were made, we kind of struggled a little bit with that. So after the first year, I told the guys, we're gonna get selfless out there. Because if we're going to be a very successful team, you have to give yourself up for the better of the team. So we'll say selfless. But that's all part of recruiting. And the due diligence that we did to make sure we had those kind of players is what, fortunately for us, with the talent and the selfless guys, allowed us to turn the program around and be successful.
And it shows that the multiple elements of recruiting, anyone can put on a good performance in a meeting in a living room. But when they're on the court in high school, it doesn't lie.
In
the heat of the moment, you see what they're going to be like.
The heat of the moment, you see. It's why it's great when you go multiple times, because you can see that after maybe once or twice, you know, you get a feel for what their talent is. I mean, you know, but you need to watch other things when you're out there. Yes. What's going to happen in the heat of the moment? How do they warm up? Are they into it? Are they with their teammates? Or is everybody else on one side of the floor and they're on the other with their headphones on? These are just little nuances to it that you can watch to see what kind of team guys, you know, for us or gals for the women's side, that they're going to be.
Are there as many regulations as you hear about in the Division I in terms of recruiting?
Very similar.
Okay.
Very similar, yes.
And it's funny, with the Knicks, it's become this discussion of, all right, Phil Jackson runs the triangle, but this isn't a team made for the triangle. It's easy, a little different in college, but you really can bring in the players that fit your system. Do you have one system, or do you adapt? Do you change it during the game?
No, we have, you know, we do have a system. We run a five-out motion, and I love skilled guys, bigs who can shoot the ball, so we do a lot with that. And took, you know, a lot of the ball screen stuff from being around Coach Wright. So it's really a nice emphasis on that with some high post stuff. We don't typically play with a low post player. So we do. I had an idea of what I really always, over the last couple of years, would have liked to have seen from an offense. And I was, you know, again, I was around, you know, from being around Coach Wright and watching with our days with Speedy and coming with all the ball screen offense we used to do and watching coaches' teams now. But with that, we were able to take, you know, take really what we tried it last year, which was solid, and then we tweaked a couple of things this year, as you just asked. We took the personnel that we had last year and we changed a few of the things that I would have liked to have done to fit with that team, and then this year we were able to change it when we had all the new recruits here into the offensive style. We love going up and down, and I referenced the Warriors earlier. At one point this year, we had the most made three-pointers, or the second most made three-pointers, I should say, of any team at any level. There's only one team from Florida that had more than us made threes. It's an exciting way to play. We get up and down the floor, and it's a lot of fun, but that's where our offense comes from.
Yeah, when I went to that game, you guys are fast. There's no time to take a bite of the pretzel.
Yeah,
Your head up.
Yeah, exactly right, because there's probably a three going on.
That's right, yeah, no kidding. How do you go about assembling a staff once you take this job?
So one of the guys, well, there were a few. One, you always keep in the back of your mind who you know, and I took this from Coach Wright as well. He always said, you surround yourself with really good people and really loyal people, hardworking people. And from there, there were two guys that I worked with, one of them at Hofstra and Fordham. And then there was another guy that was a manager for us at Fordham, so I was very comfortable with that. And then there was a coach that I had recruited, and he and I had talked about one of his players over the last year. And normally it just worked out great, because the young man that I hired is just a wonderful guy, a great coach. But he told me about him. He said, "Listen, the recruit that you're talking about, he just signed. But I have another recruit for you. One of my assistant coaches would really like to get into college coaching, and you know, we have a great graduate assistant program here, and you know, I know you have classes, and I think he'd be very good for you." So he came in, interviewed, and he's been terrific. And then two of the other guys that I hired also were people that I had been around. So a lot of me is comfort knowing what kind of people. And again, that's something else that I took from Coach Wright. I remember like it was yesterday. We were driving to a camp, and I specifically asked him about that, and about hiring a staff, and that was his answer to me. So to this day, 18 years later, I still hold to it.
So you were recruiting. You were recruiting a player, and you ended up with a coach with that high school.
Yes.
High school guy?
Yeah. So he's from the school is Loyola Chicago, Loyola High School in Chicago. And when I was at Fordham, his coach was the guy was calling me about one of his players, and it worked out that he wasn't going to go to that level. So when I got here, it wasn't quite 8:10. When I got here, I called him to see, and he had just signed with another school. He said, but my work, and it worked. I would take the recruit that I wound up getting, right, the assistant coach. Right. I would take him 10 out of 10 times. He's been terrific.
And how do you go about delegating if you can? Especially you being so wired in 24/7. But there are so many things that a head coach has to do that are different from an assistant. How do you go about delegating responsibilities and entrusting your staff?
That's another thing I had to take from Coach Wright, because when I was even a GA, as you're growing and became a third assistant, I said, okay, now there are certain things that you were doing that you're going to have to transition into the guy that's behind you now will do. And I struggled with that. And then, you know, your coach, right, was the best. He said, you just have to trust. And, you know, you bring in good people, which we're going to do, trust, and it's going to get done. So there are certain, you know, things now that one, you have to, and two, you want your guys to learn also. I've been very fortunate that I had a lot of stuff given to me that I was able to learn as I was coming up. But I would be doing my guys a disservice if I just, And it's not a cop-out to not do it, but I want them to learn and I want them to grow. I keep a tight eye on certain things, and they always, you know, bring it back to me. And it, what's nice when you have great people, you don't even worry. You just know it's done. And after, you know, once you have your staff formulated and after a couple of different assignments, then it's just easier to continue to delegate because of, of their great responsibility.
And you want them to gel. Not that everyone has to be hanging out every moment, but the players are observant of the coach's chemistry, I'm sure, as well. And they're a reflection. It's got to be consistent.
It is a reflection. It's a reflection of the message that I'm trying to send. And that's why I want wonderful guys. If the players see bickering and unhealthy competitiveness amongst the assistant coaches, that's all a part of it. And I tell... In a team meeting, before practice, we circle up at half court, and I was speaking with the guys one day, because we speak with each other, we don't speak to each other, and one time, it's great, it's sometimes in a game, you have a lead, and everything's wonderful, you lose the lead, or things don't go right, you get a little bickering. Yep. So I told the guys, I said, this isn't, to answer your question, I told them, this isn't something that I'm just telling you guys. Come up to our office and see how we all speak to each other. I speak with the assistants speak with me, the assistants speak with each other. And they I said, this isn't just for practice so you guys see it. They said, you want to come hang with us for an afternoon? Which I don't know if all of them wanted to hang out with us for an afternoon.
No.
But I said, you're welcome to come up and see how we interact. And that is, that it's all, everything is all a part of the big puzzle.
And lastly, in the last few minutes, I don't know the differences budget-wise, D1 to D2, but now you have a guy from New Zealand on the team, right? I mean, did he take the flight out?
Well, here's what happened with that.
Yeah.
Be honest with you, we have another guy coming from Cyprus next year. But the truth be told, both of those situations. One, we'll start with the guy from New Zealand, since that's what you asked first about. One of my assistants and I went to a prep school to watch another player. And as we were there, this young guy, Dom, was having a great game. So we inquired about him after the game, and it turned out that he was from New Zealand.
Okay.
So we didn't target him while he was in New Zealand.
Right.
So he was already in the States. He had gone to high school prior to, he was in a prep school, Proctor Academy in New Hampshire. Prior to that, he was at a high school in North Carolina. So we kind of just bumped into him, I would say. And then from there, we were able to get on the recruiting process. And then everything was, there was no difference from budgetary and constraints, because he was just like recruiting, another American player. And then the young man from Cyprus, got a tape on. I always love to follow leads. The best recruit I ever got was Charles Jenkins. You know, he was drafted to the Golden State Warriors in 2011. but come from a lead. So I was watching a tape, and on the tapes that I was watching from this young guy.
Lead, someone sent you a tape.
Somebody
said, take a look at this guy.
Yes, somebody sent me the tape, and he was a nice player, and he was coming here to visit a couple of schools anyway. And I got back to him, he took a visit. You come to Adelphi, you're falling in love with Adelphi. He and his family fell in love with it, and he's a great student, he has a lot of academic money. So he's going to be coming in and joining the program in September.
But even in the domestic recruiting, I mean, the budget is tighter. You're driving everywhere, right? There's no private plane.
There's no private plane. In a lot of places, you know, people think the private plane. Right. You're looking at, you know, a couple of conferences. Okay. Maybe have the ability to and the budget to do that. But yeah, I mean, if we need to fly, you know, we fly. I saw a kid out west in California. What I do is you really have to be a little bit more efficient with your recruiting. Where I'm not just going. I had a very good connection with the young man in California. A good friend of mine knew his family, so from there I will do that. I have no problems getting into the car and driving anywhere. Just get me my iced coffee and I could drive for like 48 hours straight. But so yeah, I do a lot of driving. I wanted to expand our base down to, you know, Baltimore, D.C., maybe a little bit of Northern Virginia, up to New England or, you know, Northern New England or even, you know, some parts of Canada if we had to. But if it's in driving, really driving range, if the flight is worth it, we will. But, you know, there are a little bit of some different budgetary differences, and that depends where you've been. But Adelphi, it's been a great opportunity, great place. When we're on the road, we don't want for anything. We stay in wonderful hotels, and again, it's a terrific opportunity at a terrific school. So those budgetary even constraints from the recruiting haven't really affected us at all.
And what's your daily, you know, what's the sort of, give me daily schedule when you walk in the office, but also now that we're in the off season, I think people, you know, in the general public, they go, we'll see him again in November. What is the time frame in terms of when recruiting heats up? What are your off season benchmarks?
Well, like right now it's the recruiting period.
Okay.
So there are days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have individual instruction. So get to the office about 7:45 in the morning, prepare for the guys, go lift. And then if I have some meetings on campus, if not, I will meet with my assistants first, and then we have our postseason workouts that are going on right now, which, you know, I'm down there. I love it's a great time for the assistant coaches to really get more confident down there on the court. So, you know, we come up with a nice workout, so we'll be down for those, and then we'll come up. Very often we'll meet about the workouts, what we thought, and then just different meetings on campus, to spend time maybe with some of the people that during the season you're not able to as much, and then you're on the phones recruiting, that doesn't stop, and so that's very often Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then if I'm able to, Tuesday, Thursday, try to get out to the high school's recruiting. There are days that I leave right after our workouts, and then I'll go recruiting wherever it is.
Sure.
You know, we have a player signed right now out of Baltimore, so I could, finish a workout at noon, jumping right in the car, get down there, get there by 3:30, watch a workout from 4 to 6, and then grab my coffee, and then I'm driving back home. So the days, they're still full days. So there's always something to do. Now you get ready for recruiting and you start getting ready for camps. So, you know, this year we're thinking about doing a team camp. So you have to get ready for that, getting on the phone and speaking with the coaches. So there's always something going on. And another
camp meaning, sorry, just for the team to
high school.
You're running a camp.
Yes,
okay.
Running a high school team camp. And then, of course, spending time with your players, whether it's them just popping into my office, seeing them on their way to class, and it's important that you build a relationship, and it's like, it's very much like a family. You know, the trust has already been established, and just really strengthening that relationship so everybody knows that we're all there for each other.
A lot of stuff going on.
It's a lot going on.
It's a lot going on.
It's seasonal. You have your preseason, stuff before the year, getting everybody reacclimated to school, getting into your preseason workouts. Then you have your, and recruiting, and then you have your practice season for the next 4 weeks. Then the games come. Then you have your postseason. And then after that, you have maybe the, as you're getting ready for camps, might be slow, like once the guys go home
right.
in the middle of May for like a week, but then you get really get ready for camps.
Right.
And then from there, your summer recruiting. August, as long as everything went well academically, and which we take a ton of pride in our academics right now, our team GPA this semester was a 3.467, just about a 3.5. So then August should be a little bit slower as you're preparing for your preseason again.
Yep.
So it's very seasonal, but there's always something going on.
Do you set your schedule non-conference-wise, or is that done at the administrative level?
No, we set it. We're still in the process of finalizing
that. So that's another thing.
So that and on top of that, yeah, that's like scheduling and recruiting are year-round.
Right.
That doesn't stop. Because
right.
You have to make sure that your schedule is done properly, and you don't want to wait too long and getting dates right. So that's always being worked on.
And you want to promote your program and get out there at the local Kiwanis and the religious organizations, you know.
Absolutely.
And sell it.
That's huge to be a part. We've really tried to embrace ourselves with the community.
Mm-hmm.
We had an initiative that I really wanted to do earlier in the year, and I called it Selfless Sunday. Selfless Sunday during our preseason. We started it. It just turned out it was right around 9/11. So we went, I brought the team down to the Chelsea Pier. We went for a little bit. We did a couple of like calisthenics and a couple of different circuits, and then from there we ran down to the World Trade Center.
Wow!
And we spent some time there and really got to see, you know, get a good feel, because so often you hear about it, and we're here in New York. We're in Delphites. We're 23 miles from Manhattan, and we're 12 miles from the beach. We're in this incredible. For the listeners, it's not exactly the same, but
right.
In my office. It have a little bit of a play on words here. You see Manhattan, then you see Adelphi, and then you see the beach in that order.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted the guys to get a feel and understand that, just hearing about it, seeing it. And last year we did it 2 weeks in a row, because sometimes you go, you see something once, and then that's it. So the first Sunday and a second Sunday, we went down to 9/11. We went down to the memorial. And then after that, every Sunday, went to a children's hospital. We helped with a three-on-three a basketball tournament that was held here. We did various selfless acts and embraced ourselves within the community to really do everything that we could to promote the selflessness. And it's a great community here as well. So we're doing that. And yes, then for me, out with the Kiwanis, out with, you know, try to be with the Chamber of Commerce and various stores in the community, just to come out and with what we have here at Adelphi, and looking forward to hopefully the product that we keep building, it's a great place to come watch a basketball game. You know, it's very affordable, $5. You come, you bring your family, they get to see a great level of basketball. And, you know, I have a photo of my office right now. By the end of the season, it was sold out. It was, you know, 1,500 people here, and it was an electric atmosphere, electric crowd, and that's what I'm trying to continue to build.
Nice gym, too. Nice
beautiful
facilities.
Beautiful facility. And
yeah.
If you're going to talk about Division One and all that, this
right.
is Division One facility. Everything that is on our campus is really done to the highest level.
It really is. And that's highlighted by the man they have leading their basketball program. Thanks to Dave for taking the time. Next week, my guest, Comcast Sportsnet New England host and reporter, Trenny Kuznarek, who's been so open about dealing with depression. She's really an incredible person. That's all for now. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.